$1 million on a quarterback?
In a world full of podcasts, he's the undisputed heavyweight champion of hot takes. An Auburn sports homer, master of the book, and message board legend. Get your buttons buttoned and your hats flattened, because the Top Button Podcast is about to kick off. And you don't want to miss your courtside seat. Now, here's your host, Charlie Fine.
Yes, sir. We're back. It's episode 40. We've made it 40 episodes into this thing of the Top Button Podcast. Get buttoned, get flattened. It's Charlie Five. We're about to have some fun. We're going to talk about possibly spending $1 million on a portal quarterback in the future if the situation were to arise. 50-50 balls. You know I love 50-50 balls. And then we're going to talk about some portal basketball portal updates. But before we do that, we got to give a shout out to our boy Ford Stokes at Active Wealth Management. You got to check out his television show that's been launched, Retirement Results. You can catch it on WZDX in Huntsville on Sundays at 10:30 or 8:30 in Columbus, Georgia on WXTX. And if you go to the website at retirementresults.com, if you've missed some episodes, you want to catch back up, they got them all uploaded there. There's also a lot of good resources that you can check out. Ford's got all kinds of websites with all kinds of resources, but be sure to check out retirementresults.com or activewealth.com and get all the information about what you need to do to get yourself ready for the future, for retirement. Protect and grow the wealth that you've worked so hard to earn, and Ford Stokes is the guy for the job. Give him a shout, tell him War Eagle, Ford Stokes, Active Wealth Management. All right, so Hugh's been doing some media rounds, and he's honestly saying a lot of stuff that we've all kind of wanted to hear. We've all, you know, assumed, we've all guessed that's the way things played out, but he's given a little bit more detail, and I think it's been refreshing. Sometimes Hugh, I think, says too much. Maybe not. Let me rephrase that. Hugh doesn't say too much, but he says more than he has to. Let's just say that. He says some things sometimes that I think even though he's brutally honest, I think probably sometimes rubs people the wrong way. I personally love it because you always know where he stands. You always know where Auburn stands. One thing he talked about on the McElroy and Kublik in the morning. He was on a couple of days ago, and they were talking about the quarterback situation. They were talking about Peyton Thorne, and Hugh basically said, you know, I had two options. You know, I could have, you know, spent $1 million on a quarterback, or I could have chosen to continue to build the offense the way it needs to be built, and then sort of surround all the different quarterbacks, whether it be Peyton, Holden, Hank, Walker, White, and develop those. It's like I had two options, really. I had two options. And when you really look at that whole situation, that's something that we always suspected was the case at the end of the day. But there was some quarterbacks that Auburn did look at that you looked at Riley Leonard hard, and you know, luckily we avoided Riley Leonard because you know he's been in a boot the whole time. I think he had some injury issues, so people were sort of upset that he went to Notre Dame. I think we probably ended up on the right side of the coin there. Imagine if you were to spend, you know, close to $1 million on Riley Leonard, and then he's injured, and then you can't add some of the pieces to the puzzle. Imagine what kind of boat we'd be in moving forward for 2024. You looked at Cam Ward. Again, Cam Ward, he's an electric quarterback. He's got a lot of talent, but can Cam Ward just in general with the wide receiver room as it is, you know, if it hinders you from being able to get a Cam Coleman, if it hinders you from being able to get a Keandre Smith-Lambert, hey, even a Percy Lewis at left tackle, what does the offense look like surrounding that quarterback? And I think it sort of opened a lot of people's eyes. It opened my eyes a little bit more to what all decisions go into building a roster. It's not just as simple anymore as, you know, recruiting guys in and developing them and building them up. There's so many different scenarios that you have to play through. And Hugh kind of gave us an insight a little bit more in depth than I think a lot of coaches would on what were the decision-making processes and going through saying, hey, I'm just going to roll with Peyton. I've seen what he can do. I know that the offense was a train wreck from an organizational standpoint, I'm just talking about strictly from like game planning, film breakdown, putting a plan together to go attack a defense. It was a nightmare last year, and Hughes owned up to that. So do I throw that all on the quarterback, or, you know, can if I bring it all in-house and it's all under me now, will just that organization make the offense look a little bit better in general? Again, what does this offense look like if you can't land a Cam Coleman? And what does this offense look like if you don't have you go into another year without a true number one receiver? Or your number one receiver is, or your best receiver is, you know, maybe, you know, you got a Perry Thompson early. You got that guy committed early, and then you got Cam late. What if you go, I mean, Perry is probably going to be a really good player, but how do you feel about going into the year if your one of your top receivers is a guy that doesn't get here until June or late May? I mean, that's scary. I mean, if you have an injured Riley Leonard or a Cam Ward or somebody like that, how do you feel the offense is going to be? How would you feel about the offense being that much better? I think a lot of times we forget that the NIL money is not endless. You know, there is a limit. So it's just like, oh, we should have just, you know, you're taking the scenario of adding a Cam Coleman. I'm sorry, a Cam Ward, a Riley Leonard. You're taking that scenario, that person, and you're adding it into the roster as is and thinking, oh, if we would have just done that, we would be, I mean, imagine where we would be. But the problem is, based off the comments you made, it seems like it was kind of one or the other. You know, do I spend that money and try to bring in, you know, one of these, you know, top tier guys in the portal that's not even a guarantee that they'll be worth that much money, and then not be able to sort of build around your quarterback and build in a way that it could sustain and being able to bring in all these receivers that you can develop. And then next year, when a quarterback rolls in, you got a little bit more depth. You got a little bit more developed depth at wide receiver. You got a little bit more options without having to go back into the portal. So I thought it was an interesting conversation. I thought it was an interesting thing that, you know, for him to sort of open up that way. And we've all kind of guessed it, but hearing Hugh say it, I think it makes a lot of sense. The exact quotes were the options that, you know, you were presented with was develop Peyton, develop Holden, develop Hank, develop Walker, or go spend $1 million on X guy, this guy. And I just couldn't bring myself to do that because there were so many pieces that I have to put together. And I think that makes a ton of sense. Now, the most intriguing comment, though, was the one that he said afterwards. Okay. Shortly thereafter, the comment was, and this was my biggest takeaway of the whole thing. So he said, I couldn't bring myself to do that as far as bringing in $1 million quarterback when I have all these pieces that I have to do to build. I couldn't bring myself to do that at that point in time. Then he says, now, I'm not saying I won't do that in time, okay? In other words, spending that much money on a big portal transfer quarterback is not out of the question. That is on the table. And so I started thinking about that comment, and I was thinking about next year. So let's really think about next year. Okay. Next year, I'm just playing devil's advocate, worst case scenario. Okay. Let's talk about next year. So next year you'd roll in, you'll have to replace some offensive linemen. Those aren't going to typically cost you a ton of money. You got a Tyler Johnson who can be a franchise left tackle. You got a Xavier Miller that's got another year to come back. So you got your tackles already set. You got Connor Lue back again. He'll be playing as a junior. And then you got some young guys that are coming in, and then you could probably add some interior dudes in the portal for not a ton of money if you had to shore up the offensive line on top of, you know, continuing to recruit high school and JUCO if need be. So your offensive line, you feel pretty good about. Running backs, you ought to feel great about. You still have Damari Alston. You'd still have Jeremiah Cobb. And then any freshman that you would bring in this class. So your running back room, you don't have to dip in there. I'm skipping over quarterbacks. Wide receiver, you just signed the best wide receiver class in history. They're all going to be sophomores. You might only have, instead of having to add two or three guys from the portal, you may only have to go add one. And it may not even have to be, you know, somebody that's, you know, top tier, like super expensive guy. Defense, almost all your defense comes back. You got a bunch of young guys other than a few linebackers, and you have a bunch of young defensive linemen. You would lose a lot of senior interior guys, so you may have to spend just a little bit on the defensive line, but you got tons of young linebackers, tons of young pass rushers, tons of young DBs. So you're sort of continuing to build. If next year, if you get into a situation at quarterback where you don't feel great about what you got moving in, and then the only piece that you may need to add to make that team, that 2025 team, make a run, is a million-dollar quarterback. I mean, he just said it right there. I'm not saying I won't do it in the future, but the opportunity, the presentation has to be there to where it makes sense. You can't just go spend willy-nilly on a big-time quarterback every single year when the roster was in the shape that it's in, and it has to be built. We're sort of trending in the right direction of having the roster to the point where you can just sort of pick and pull and plug in guys from the portal to supplement and not having to sort of rebuild. Like, the defensive line room was so depleted, you had to bring in four dudes just to play three positions. I mean, you had to bring in four guys to play three positions, and you already had some guys here, but you were that depleted, and all you had were a bunch of young guys that you just brought in. So I thought that was I think that's very intriguing. It's very encouraging to know that, you know, there's this narrative that you know, we're just not going to spend the money to go get those guys. And right there, Hugh tells you, hey, if it makes sense, and I'm in the spot where that's about the only missing piece we have, we'll do it. I mean, he's take his words right there. He said it. If I'm not saying I wouldn't spend that much money. So in other words, the decision to go with Peyton Thorne or the quarterback room we have in right now, the decision to go there was not because I'm cheap and I don't want to spend, go compete, or we don't have the money to go compete for the top guys, but it's just simply that the scenario that we're in, the situation that we're in, it made more sense to roll the dice with the room that we have and then build the pieces around them. And then I'm going to bet on myself a little bit. Hugh's betting on himself. I just think I'm a better offensive coach than the situation we had, you know, last year where I took a step back so I could recruit. I just think I'm better. I just think just putting me in charge, just letting me call the plays, just letting me work with the quarterbacks and everything, and my guys Kent Austin and my guys Derek Nix, I just think if I just put me, that's probably worth $1 million quarterback. That makes Peyton Thorne, that makes Holden Garner, that makes Hank, you know, that makes Hank Brown, that makes Walker White better. Just me being there, and I think that speaks volumes, and I think it makes a lot of sense. I know a lot of us are, you know, Peyton is polarizing. The starting quarterback at Auburn for the past decade, it seems like, up ever since, you know, Nick Marshall in 2013, it seems like the quarterback has been the most polarizing position because everybody wants to back up the play or everybody wants a new quarterback. And, you know, I get some of it. And then some of it, like, you just got to – some of it, you got to understand that the coaches are trying to put the best player out there to win. And not saying the coach can't choose wrong, but you're not always right. You're not always right. And some predictions I've seen, I don't think they've ever been right as far as who we think is the best quarterback. So again, I thought that was him opening up there. It's very interesting to me that I think the biggest takeaway is, hey, if the cards are dealt correctly and all we got to have is that ace of spades, all we got to have is that million-dollar quarterback, we'll do it. We're not afraid to do it. But it didn't make sense this year. And when you look at how everything played out, I agree. You get a bona fide number one receiver. I don't care if he's a freshman. Bona fide number one receiver in Cam Coleman. A very solid power five leading receiver from the previous year team to be your number 1B or 2. And then you get Robert Lewis, who looks like he's going to be extremely talented, savvy, older receiver. And then you still got these young guys that can come in, and Perry could come in and blow the top off this thing and just completely take over. Hugh said he's got the body to be able to do it. He looks like he can do it. So he may come in and just take this whole dang thing over anyway. So I think it makes a lot of sense. It was a very interesting read. I encourage everybody to check out that show, especially and be watching Hugh's media appearances over the next, several weeks and things like that, because that son of a gun will just talk. He'll talk and he'll tell you everything you need to know, sometimes almost a little bit too much. All right, moving on, we got to talk 50-50 balls. And you know who loves 50-50 balls more than me? It's Hugh Freeze. But before we do that, we got to give a shout out to Plains Coffee. Check them out. Use coupon code BUTTON for 10% off every single order from now until the end of time. They have a roast for everything. You like it light, you like it dark, you like it super strong, they got it for you. A little bit of everything, and you can have it freshly ground, shipped to your door before, just days before it ships. So check them out, plainscoffee.com, use coupon code BUTTON. All right, so Hugh plays golf. Everybody, that's no secret. He's a big golfer. This week was the region's tradition in Birmingham, which is, if you watch golf at all, you got the Senior Tour. This is the Senior Tour's first major. It's kind of like their Masters. Obviously not at that level, but it's one of the only places where they played the same. They play the tournament at the same place every single year. Okay, so it's in Birmingham. It's either going to be at Greystone, or sometimes they do it at Shoal Creek, but typically it's been at Greystone. So it's the same place almost every single year. And every Wednesday, they have the celebrity pro-am. Typically, all kinds of SEC coaches, former player personalities, and then a lot of celebrities, country singers, things of that nature. You're always going to have the Alabama head coach for football. You're always going to have the Auburn head coach for football. You're always going to typically have the basketball coaches as well. Bruce sat out, which we're going to talk about that a little bit later. He sent Chad Pruitt, I think, instead. Bruce, not a big golfer in general. But when you have you have media that are going to be there and media that are going to, be asking a lot of questions. And one of the questions, obviously, they ask about the portal. Tell us about Keandre Lambert-Smith. What does this add to your room? And Hugh, it's so funny. He was really tightrope walking when he said, and I think to some what he said was, I got to be careful at how I talk about, the wide receiver room, okay? Because, and he was talking about it on an appearance with Rick and Bubba. He was talking about it whenever, some reporters, media members sort of stopped him to question him. I got to be careful. Look, just because a guy doesn't work in my offense or in our system doesn't mean he's not a great player, okay? So when I say I got to bring folks in, it's not necessarily because I think these players can't get it done. It's because for whatever – it just does – they don't work for what I want, okay? And then he started to kind of open up about what he's looking for. And I, if you know me, I'm excited, okay? I want to clarify something. When I say fade, okay, I know what we're all thinking, okay? When I say I love the fade, I think that's the best play in football. I don't necessarily mean throw the ball up high in the air and in the back of the end zone and the guy goes up and it's a one-on-one battle. I say, typically, that's probably what it means. I probably shouldn't say that as much as I do. But what I really mean is I love a true one-on-one 50-50 ball. That's one of my favorite plays in college football. I think that it's if you have a really good receiver, it's not even a 50-50. It's more like a, you know, maybe a, even a 70-30. And typically you're getting when you're running those plays, the DB is typically in a compromised scenario, you know, whether it's a back shoulder, they're typically out of position, or they're when you recruit like Hugh wants to recruit, they're going to be outsized. They're going to be outmatched physically. And Hugh Freeze said 50-50 balls and what he wants out of his wide receivers more than I could have dreamed. He said it multiple times. He made it very clear. I'm not saying that, and he didn't call people's names out. Specifically. So this is me sort of ad-libbing. I'm not saying Jay Fair's not a great player. I'm not saying that Javarius Johnson can't be a great player. But what I need some 6 foot plus dudes. Okay. I need for my system to work the way I want it to work. I need a bunch of 6'1", 6'2", 6'3" dudes all across the board that can go up and get a 50-50 ball. He specifically said that our offense is designed, my offense, the way I like it to work, is we're going to get one-on-one matchups. We're going to get one-on-one matchups, and then my guys are going to beat their guys more than often. And to me, if you know me and you know how much I love, I say fades, but I'm going to make a little substitution. I'm just going to call it 50-50. You know I love 50-50 balls. I say fades. I really mean 50-50 balls. But Hugh may love them more. So for him to say that, and he's talking about all the receivers that he's brought in, it seems like he has a very high confidence now, at least exponentially from where we were last year, of being able to line up, get a one-on-one matchup, and know that I got a dude over there that has a very high chance of beating that defensive back one-on-one. We know Cam Coleman can do it. We feel really good about Keandre Lambert-Smith and the veteran aspect there and the ability for him to be able to run routes and make breaks and make cuts and get spacing and get open. And then you got Robert Lewis, who's basically a running back playing wide receiver, who's 6 foot, 200 pounds, and can fly. Very well put together guy that you could put in the slot. And then obviously you got Rivaldo Fairweather. I've got guys now, I've got multiple options that I know if I can get them in a one-on-one scenario. Now, that doesn't mean every single play is that way, but if we get into a third down scenario and there's not a lot of third and, you know, 10, third and 11 play calls, third and eight play calls, you know, I may figure out a way to get Cam Coleman one-on-one, and I'm just going to give him a shot. He's going to win more than 50% of those battles if we put the ball in the right place. So that to me is exciting. That puts so much pressure on defensive backs. You can get tons of pass interference calls. Those type plays typically are not as easy to be interceptions because the defensive back is in a compromised position. So he's just trying to, you know, break up the arms, break up the play. He's not typically trying to, you know, dropping back in zone, reading the quarterback's eyes and then trying to make a play. Typically those one-on-ones are not high interception, you know, deals. Obviously you can drop or you can just not complete it, but there's a couple of things that can happen even outside of just making the catch that could lead to, you know, obviously moving the chain. So I love it. You know, I know some of you hate it, but, you know, I don't think I could be more excited based off of listening to Hugh talk about how much he loves the 50-50 balls. Again, I'm substituting fade now henceforth to 50-50. I'm just going to call it 50-50 because in reality, that's what I mean when I say it. So be looking forward. I'm going to be looking forward to a lot of that in the fall for sure. All right. Last thing to talk about, basketball portal, and it's not all good news. You know, I want to bug on big additions, but Auburn, you know, we had a big commitment go the other way last night. You had Jordan Ivey Curry, Steph Curry's cousin. I'm going to say he's not Steph Curry's cousin anymore. You know, if he would have come to Auburn, I would have continued to call him Steph Curry's cousin. But now he commits to UCF. And honestly, I may have got myself worked up a little bit too much about him. And I knew all along that it was not a smart decision for him to come to Auburn. I think I may have said that specifically. It just didn't make a ton of sense. You know, I know he came off the bench last year, but again, he played 27 minutes at UTSA and scored at a high clip and was a big volume guy. And that was going to, you know, that production and that those minutes were probably going to greatly decrease, even though he could play multiple positions, even though he could play point, even though he could play two, even though he probably could play some three. You know, if we went to a more, you know, 2019, 2020 style, you know, offense where you got a bunch of guards that can shoot out there, one through three, and then you got some big guys that can crash and bang around. Even in that scenario, you just look at the numbers. I mean, you got your point guard, Pegues, who's going to play probably 30-plus minutes. Then you got Denver, who should be touching 30 minutes. Then you got Pettiford, a five-star, you know, McDonald's All-American coming in that, you know, you got to play him too, that can play one and two. And then obviously you got Chad Baker-Mazzara, who, if he gets in a little bit more shape, he needs to be playing close to 30 minutes. So unless he's playing 10 minutes at each, you know, I just don't see how the math worked for him to be able to get similar minutes at Auburn. I know we wanted him badly. If you added him, that just gives you another dynamic option off the bench. So when you're doing the rotations, there's not a drop off from one to two. Helps guys, instead of having to play 30 minutes, they may only be able to have to play, you know, maybe 27 minutes a game, 28 minutes a game to stay fresh. But I don't think we're not going to add another guard, but that was one you felt you were really close to. He actually committed last night and went ahead and canceled his visit to Auburn. The last visit in the portal is a tough one. The last visit of the portal is a tough one because typically you got to get in early on those. Now, high school is the opposite. High school, you want the last one, but in the portal, it seems like you need to get on them early and go ahead and lock them down. So Jordan Ivey Curry would have loved to had him, but it never made sense for him. Never made sense to him to come to Auburn. All right, so I said earlier it was a terribly kept secret, but, you know, I think Bruce doesn't play golf, but he typically makes an appearance at the regions. You know, he's a cheerleader type guy out there. And I think he sent Chad Pruitt in his stead to play and stayed home because I believe a chore, however you want to say it or however it's pronounced. I apologize if I said it incorrectly. Visited yesterday and, you know, it's a big visit. I think he loves Auburn. I think he loves, you know, I think he would play here if everything was just yes or no. Do you want to play here? I think he would be here. But I think there's going to be some challenges, you know, from, you know, getting from Sanford to Auburn that may not be in our favor. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I'm just going to leave it at that. So can we overcome those hurdles? It doesn't seem like there's a ton of optimism. But I'm not saying it's impossible either. But from all accounts, he loves Auburn. He loves Bruce, and we would love to have him. We would love to have him. But it just doesn't seem. It seems like there's going to be some hurdles that we may not be able to get across. So we'll have to see how that one plays out. From what I understand, he may still be here. May still be leaving at some point in time this morning. So let's see how that one plays out. But I mean, those two, if you lose those two, especially that power forward spot, you're sort of in a bind, I think. And again, this is another situation where we're kind of in a spot where it's tough to pull in a guy to come play with not guaranteed minutes. Now, Akor probably would not have had an issue because he's just that talented. I mean, he scored 16-ish, 17 points a game, but he only played 22 minutes a game. So, good gracious, imagine if he played more than that His per 40 minutes was like 27 points a game or something crazy like that. So obviously the more you put him out on the court, the more he could play. But you do have Chaney, who we know we saw last year at times. You saw really the what he could be. Again, that's a huge jump to replace take Chaney's production and replace Jalen's production. That's a big jump. Okay, that's a massive jump. But if Dylan can play a few more minutes at the one and work on his foul, work on foul defending without fouling, to allow Janai to play a little bit at four, you could maybe have a little good three-man rotation there, and then you just add somebody that can come play, 10 minutes, a developmental type play. Maybe that could be a Darren Scott. We brought a Darren Scott in last year, JUCO guy. He played very little. Maybe he could be that guy that just gives you 10 minutes, or you find somebody that can come in that's got a little bit of experience that could play a little bit. Okorakor was your best scenario because it seemed like he really wanted to be here. And if they clear the hurdles they need to clear, he will be here. And that'll be an elite, 4 or 5 spot, an elite front court for sure. But right now it's still a very good one. You're just going to have to play more minutes. Look, some people last year, I was hearing a lot of people last year that were mad that, mad about people that mad about dudes only playing, 20 to 23 minutes a game. Hey, your best player should be playing more minutes. Well, now you're going to get the opportunity to see that. And those same people are mad that, we didn't land Jordan Ivey Curry, or we may not land Okorakor. And it's like, okay, which one is it? Which one do we want? Do we want to have our guards play more minutes, our good guards play more minutes, or do we want to have, we're going to rotate? Because if you bring in a Jordan Ivey Curry, you're going to have to rotate. You're going to have to rotate them. There's just not enough minutes to go around. So, again, I still think you got to bring in a point guard. You got to bring in a backup point guard. And I think we will, whether it be from the JUCO rank, whether it be from, we talked a little bit. There was a guy that popped up from – I think Morehead State, Mark Freeman, who missed all of last year from an injury but's played a ton of minutes at point guard. I think he would probably be elated to come be the backup point guard at Auburn for his last year. And maybe that's all you need. Maybe that's all you need is just a dude that can come play 10 or 12 minutes and let J.P. Pegues sort of catch a breather. We'll see what happens. Again, we knew all along that these last two roster spots were going to last a little bit longer. We're going to take a little bit longer to add. And that's what we're seeing. So, again, let's be patient. I know the Duke Miles situation stunk. I think he's probably would, I don't know if he's burnt all his bridges, but I wouldn't be shocked if, I know that the way he handled things really rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. But, now that all these situations, haven't worked out, maybe could you make another run back in? Because he's not signed and he's not enrolled. And it doesn't even matter if he is signed. He still hasn't enrolled at Oklahoma, and he could just change his mind and come to Auburn. Again, we talked about the craziness of the financial aid agreements and how those got to be shored up. But as of right now, he's still kind of open. I wouldn't expect that to be an option, but I'm never going to say never. Guys, I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm not expecting a ton of recruiting news over the weekend, but again, the way the Tyler Lockhart commitment popped with Auburn football, the four-star linebacker from Mississippi, nothing's impossible. But we'll see what happens, and then we'll get back and talk about it on Tuesday. So I really appreciate it. Like this video, subscribe to this channel, and get in the daggum comments. If you think Hugh made the right decision, the right call on Peyton Thorne and building the roster around him, let me know about it. If you think he should have said, hey, let's go for lower tier surrounding pieces and then ball out for a Cam Ward or somebody like that, let me know who you think it should have been. Should it have been Cam Ward? Should it have been, Caden Salter, somebody like that? I don't think Caden Salter was an option, but if you think, who do you think would be worth it to sacrifice possibly landing a Cam Coleman, a Keandre Lambert Smith, a Robert Lewis? Who do you, if you had to take, you know, a half a step or a full step down receiver in you know, to substitute to be able to land somebody like that, who would it be? Who is the one quarterback out there that you think would have been worth, you know, $1 million or worth what it took to be able to, you know, make this offense better? I'd love to hear about it. Let me know what you think about 50-50 balls. If you love them, if you hate them, let me know about it. And then obviously let's talk about basketball also in the comments. I'll respond to pretty much every single one that I can. So, and this most of the time it's every single one. So again, follow me on social, on Twitter, @_Charlie_5. And we're going to get back after it on Tuesday. This is episode 40. I can't believe it's already made it to 40. I've had such a blast doing this and I hope we get to keep doing it. So y'all have a great weekend and we'll check back episode 40 of the Top Button Podcast. Stay buttoned.
Thanks for listening and drive home safely.